The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy.
Yeah. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Lee Shipley, and I'm in the middle of Texas in the country, so my internet is spotty, and I am praying that we have good reception because Sunny is one of the sweetest, brightest souls with such a fascinating story. You're a little Texas star also. She's in the Texas music scene, and you are just so talented. So, and she's also neighbors with my sister, and I think probably subconsciously, you're one of the reasons why we named our daughter Sunny, because I got to know you when I was living in Austin, and you just are the sweetest soul.
Oh, thank you. And your sister is one of my favorite people ever. Like, she's the best.
She is. So I just kind of want to start, and you have such an interesting story. You've gone through so much, from loss, from health issues, back-to-back babies, the second one unexpected, being married to a star, Jordan. He was a big football star. And then y'all went on to having your own hunting show, and you just have such an amazing story. So I kind of want to start from the beginning. Tell me about your childhood and your life and how you got into music and some of the events that shaped who you are.
Yeah, so I grew up in like Northwest Texas, like right before you hit the panhandle. It's called Rotan. It's probably only has like, I would say 1,100 people in it right now. But it was a 1A school when I was there. And my dad's a farmer and rancher. So just, you know, a really low key life. And I had a brother and a sister. But one of the biggest events that has shaped me, you know, growing up wise, is I lost my sister when she was 15 and I was 13. So that was just, you know, loss is just hard in general, but when you're young and then it's a sister who's like really close to you, it totally shapes you in a different way, you know? Rotan, and then I went on to Texas Tech for a year, then South Plains College Music School.
How did you
know that?
Because my husband, Michael, lost a brother when he was 12 and his brother's 15. So very
similar. Oh, really? I didn't know that.
And they were super close.
Yeah.
How does your life change when that happens?
Well, I think, especially when you grow up in a small town, it's not sheltered on purpose. It just is, you know, because you're just mostly around good, really good people. Not that you aren't in the city, but it's just like, it's just a little different. Everyone's family, you know, and you just never think anything. You know, everybody, you can, I mean, like, I was driving when I was 12, and driving to school. And so everyone knows everyone, and you just, it doesn't ever register with you that anything like that could ever happen, you know? And then when it does, it just totally like rocks your world and kind of makes you grow up faster, you know, than maybe what you should have or wanted to.
Was it a class?
But yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, in a way, she fell out of the back of a pickup. Yeah. So I totally have phobias about that, like people riding in back of pickups and ATVs and things like that, for sure. So.
Gosh, what, and you're amazing to talk about this, because I know these are hard things to talk about, but I know a lot of people deal with loss, and especially in a year that's been a really hard year for people. How did you find ways to deal with the pain, and especially being so young? Like where did you go for refuge?
Well, I'm just a creative person. I think you are too, obviously. And I dove into music for sure. Like in my room, I would sing on my karaoke machine for hours. Like my parents said, I would literally go in there and sing for hours. And then I started writing like poetry and stuff, which led to songwriting. But I think I stuffed a lot of it, because when you're young, you just do that because you just don't want to deal with it. And then, it ends up biting you in the butt and comes out later in different ways, and you end up having to deal with it. But yeah, I think just in the moment, dealing with it then, just like creativity for sure.
Yeah. Is that kind of what like pushed you so deeply into music?
I was already doing it, but I think I just got more and more into it, and I didn't realize it at the time, but it's become therapy for sure since then, and always has been.
Started playing music when you're young, early teenage years. When did you start performing, and when did you start really realizing that you had a talent and you wanted to pursue this?
Well, I think we did like little plays, and this is so funny. It's so like West Texas small town, but we did like plays and stuff in church, and I didn't know like I had any talent. I just liked to do it, and of course everyone there says, will tell you you're good, no matter what. But he's always been like a pretty honest critic, and he's just like, I think you really ought to pursue this and work on it. So that's when I was like, okay, well maybe this could be something,
So I kind of like, when I grew up in Waco, Texas, and I felt like everyone always told, I sang at church and in the show choirs and all the choirs, and everyone's like, oh my God, you're so good. You could really make it. You should move to Nashville. You should do all this stuff. And so like, you kind of go in thinking like, man, I actually like, I'm pretty awesome. Like I think I can do this. Move to a big city. And like, you moved to Austin and I moved to Nashville, and it's like, you get there and it's like, whoa, there's so many amazing people. Like, cause it's, you're the star or able to shine so bright in your smaller town. It's like, when you get to the big city, it was a big culture shock for me. And I was super intimidated and shut down about singing for a while. And I got nervous. Did you experience any of that when you got to like a big city with a lot of talented people?
Yes. And I didn't even move to a big city. I moved to Lubbock, and I went to Tech for a year. And then I transferred to the country and bluegrass school at South Plains, which a lot of people like the Dixie Chicks. Well, not Dixie Chicks, but Natalie Maines went there. Leanne Womack. There's been several people who have gone. Jed Hughes. You probably know Jed.
Yeah.
Trent Willman.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of people have been through there. Yeah. And so I went there, and it's a very small school, but even there, the talent is just unbelievable. And I got like my confidence knocked really early because the vocal coach, I'd never had vocal lessons or guitar lessons or anything like that. I'd learned to do everything wrong, basically. And she was like, you're singing all wrong. And so I would go back home on the weekends and sing at church. And my dad would be like, what happened to you? Like, you don't have any confidence anymore. And I didn't. So yeah, I definitely went through that whole deal, having to relearn some technique stuff that I really did need to relearn. I didn't think I did at the time, but you know, as time goes on, you realize, oh yeah, okay. That is better, you know? so for sure.
Because like, I remember when I was early on, like young, in my early 20s, and I moved to Nashville, gone to Belmont, and I hit those first, well, I hit some in high school too, but I hit those first really big roadblocks where it's like, you get your confidence is shot, you feel like you have to change everything, you feel like you're kind of like, I mean, I always felt, I was so extreme, I always felt like sort of like a loser, like I wasn't good enough and all this stuff, and it's like, how did you decide to press on? Because a lot of times people hit those moments and they just quit and they just decide that they're just done and it's too hard and they're not going to make it. But really, everybody hits those moments. It's just you have to decide that you're going to work through them and press on and let yourself feel a little embarrassed. Let yourself feel like you have so much to learn. Let yourself grow. Let yourself be exposed and be vulnerable. How did you decide that, yes, this is really hard, my confidence is knocked, but I'm going to keep working on this because I know I have it and I know I can get to the next level if I keep pushing. Like how did you talk yourself into that? Because I feel like a lot of people want to quit at those moments.
I think just for me, having people in my life that were encouraging, like my parents, you know, they were never like, okay, you need to go do something else, you know? And I'm so thankful for that. Because they easily could have, and then also I fell in love with songwriting, which had nothing to do with, I mean, it does, but it had nothing to do with like my singing or guitar playing, even though you have to do both of those when you songwrite. But I fell in love with that even more. I had kind of already been messing with it a little bit, but just kind of more or less dove into that more than singing. And I thought I could do this for, you know, even if I didn't sing, you know, I could definitely do this for the rest of my life if I really work at it. So yeah, I guess that's just kind of how I dealt with it and kind of decided to take the next step and move to Nashville. So.
Okay. So what was Nashville like for you?
Well, I went to Belmont. I know you did too. And that's kind of how we ran into each other at a party here. So it's been so long. Like, I feel so old because it's been like so many years ago.
But I was so afraid when I was at Nashville, when I was in college at Belmont, like I was so intimidated. It was so overwhelming for me. Yeah. Like I would just go to class and go home. And like, I was so scared to like get to know people, or I thought everyone was better than me. I moved to Texas and having all this family and then moving to a new state. Like I wish I could have been more confident when I was in Belmont and like put myself out there more, because I feel like I missed a lot of opportunities because I was so afraid of just that I wasn't good enough and that everyone was judging me when really no one's even looking at you. Yeah, because we saw each other like out a little bit, but I was just like, I was such a nervous wreck when I was in college.
Same. Very intimidated. The only thing I feel like that saved me was, well, I had an amazing roommate that I was just paired with. I didn't know her, but she's also from Texas. Her name's Sarah. Well, it's Gary now, but her name was Sarah Irby. But she actually, when I first moved there, she'd already been there a semester, and she like pushed me to enter like songwriting competitions and stuff like that. And the one thing I feel like that saved me was the songwriting competition at Belmont, because that opened so many doors for me and gave me confidence kind of to move forward, even though I feel so.
What kind of doors did that open for you?
Sorry.
I know. Sorry. It's my rant.
Well, one of my judges, it's like cutting out. one of my judges ended up being my publisher later on. We just kind of kept relationship. And then I ended up interning for one of my judges, which led to some other opportunities. And I just realized you just kind of have to put yourself out there. And I sucked. Like, I sucked so bad when I was, I look back at the songs like that I played and everything. And I was, it's so embarrassing. But yeah, that definitely just, you know, it, just putting yourself out there. And I was still so insecure, but I definitely have regret. I have regrets about not putting myself out there more when I was there. But, you know, there's a reason for everything.
If I could tell my younger self anything, it would be stop overanalyzing yourself. Stop playing small. Take every opportunity. You're going to suck in the beginning because you're just figuring it out. But dare to suck. Go for it. And good for you for joining the songwriting competition, because that's nerve-wracking. You're in Nashville at Belmont University, the music school, and you're putting yourself out there to be judged as a songwriter. I mean, I didn't have the confidence to do that. I started playing at Judge Bean's Barbecue barely. Like, after living in Nashville for like 2 years, I finally started singing out. Like, it took me forever to even sing out in Nashville because I'm like, everyone's so good. I'm just a loser.
Yeah. Yeah. No, the singing part for sure. I mean, like, there's just the singers. There're just so many amazing singers. Like, that is definitely intimidating, and songwriters too. But when I first moved there, I was just oblivious. I didn't know. You know, I think that was also a savior, was like, I had no idea how good people were, you know. So anyway,
getting a publishing deal is a big deal. Like, I ended up getting a publishing deal too through an internship, also an internship, which is another thing I would tell my younger self, which we both did, and I'm glad, is intern, get involved, get any opportunity. If you have working for free, doing whatever, working in the mailroom, hauling trash, whatever you can, get involved with the industry that you want to be in. And like, interning led me to everything. Every opportunity I had started from internships. And that led to your publishing deal, which mm-hmm. is amazing. To get a publishing deal that young is huge.
Yeah, and honestly, I probably wasn't ready for a publishing deal. But when you're that young and you're like broke, eating eggs and popcorn every night, you're like, heck yeah. You know, and in hindsight, I probably should have waited and weighed out my options and stuff. But, you know, you do what you got to do, so.
So in the middle of all this, you are also struggling with an autoimmune disorder.
Yeah, I think I started, I didn't start feeling bad until about 3 years out of college. My husband and I, which is a whole other story, but we got engaged, I guess, my second year writing for the pub company.
And brought you back to Texas.
And Jordan?
Yeah.
Well, actually, the health stuff ended up bringing us back. And then he played football at Cincinnati, which is only 4 hours from now. So I still would go back and forth because you could drive, which was crazy that he even got drafted somewhere so close to Nashville. But it worked out perfectly because he was busy during the week. I was busy during the week, and then I could drive, you know, and spend time with him on the weekends. But
were y'all sweethearts? I'm sorry, everyone listening, my connection sucks. This is my fault, but it's called Get Real.
We actually met. It's okay. It may be my connection, who knows. But yeah, we met in, I'm sorry, I'm hearing my baby in there, so if I'm distracted, that's why. We met in Rotan. His dad was a high school football coach, and so they moved the year after we lost my sister Haley, and we, you know, held hands and watched movies for a year, and then they ended up moving away after that. But we kind of kept in touch for like 10 years after that, and then long story short, his, when I moved to Nashville, his one of his best friends from high school, I don't know if you know Luke Pale, but he was on The Bachelor. Okay. Yeah. So that Luke is actually one of Jordan's best friends from high school. They had a cute, like an awesome group of guys that they, I know, isn't that crazy? Right. That they went to high school with. And Luke was stationed in, you know, he was in the Army. So he was stationed outside of Nashville and he was being deployed that year. And so all the boys came up to see him and that he called me when he came up there and we kind of hung out. I had a boyfriend at the time, but I didn't tell either one of them. And then when Luke came back the next summer, thankfully, they all came back to see him again. And that's when we started dating.
So y'all,
and then we got engaged really fast after that.
So. Y'all had young love and sparks that never died.
I think so. And my mom always told me that I would marry him and my grandmother too. Like my grandmother loved Jordan, even when he was 13 and 14 years old, you know? And I was always like, no, whatever. Cause he was still like just a little skinny, you know, he was so sweet, but he wasn't a man yet, you know? And so I couldn't like process that in my head yet. But definitely when we got back around each other, I was like, okay, yeah, they were right.
So what was it about Jordan? And then I want to get back to you getting diagnosed with your autoimmune disorder and all of that and how you dealt with that. And obviously moving back to Texas, engagement. But what was it about Jordan that was so special that your mom and grandma noticed right away?
My grandmother used to, he was just sweet. Like she said that he would just always be like patting on, like on my leg or just checking on me or, he was affectionate, like, but not in like creepy ways, you know? And I've never been like a super cuddly affectionate person. But he was, and I don't know, he just has a real, I don't want to cry.
You can cry.
Okay. But his heart, he just has like the purest heart Aww. Of anybody I've ever known. So that's probably what they saw.
Oh, you're going to make me cry.
I'm sorry. I feel like a complete, I'm pregnant. So my hormones are like,
You're super pregnant too. You've got only a couple months left, right?
Yeah, so he's due April 27th. So, yeah, like 3 months.
Okay, so you've met Jordan again. You've been in Nashville. You have a publishing deal. You're writing music. And you're probably planning on staying in Nashville, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of what we had talked about, you know, before we got married was he's always been so supportive. And he said, I don't want you to ever follow me or... You know, I love what you do. I want you to pursue it. And he said, we'll just, you know, do what we have to do so you can do that. And so I never felt any kind of like pressure or anything from him to move or quit doing it or, you know, to support him more or anything like that. So, and of course I tried my best to support him and his things too, but what do I know about football, you know? So, anyway, we got engaged and then, we were actually in Texas. We were meeting with our preacher. We were driving, from Rotan to Lubbock, to do our premarital, counseling and stuff. And we had a really, really, we're both very lucky to be alive. We had a terrible, car wreck and, the truck rolled down like a culvert, like 4 or 5 times. I don't know exactly how many. We hit a guardrail going like, thank goodness we weren't going full speed, but we hit it head on going probably like 50 or 55 and then flipped over the guard. We hit the guardrail, flipped over long ways, like onto the guardrail and then down the culvert like 4 or 5 times. And I didn't have my seatbelt on because I had taken it off. And I was leaning up in the seat to look in the mirror to put my makeup on. And I don't know why he didn't have his seatbelt on. He just didn't. We were just young and dumb. And so whenever we hit the, what do you call it, airbag, hit me like pretty hard because I was close. And when I got, when we got out of it, we both got ourselves out of the truck. And the only reason there were people out there close to us, fire trucks and everything, was because they're having terrible wildfires that year out in that area. Otherwise we would have been by ourselves for at least 30, 45 minutes, but there was someone there really quick because our OnStar went off. And I had gotten up, and your adrenaline's going, I had gotten up and I heard something like, and felt something kind of click in my neck, but I didn't think anything of it. And I know it's gross, sorry. And so when the fire truck was there first, and one of the firemen came out and he was like, are you okay? I had like, Jordan had nothing. It was crazy. He literally had a scratch on his foot because he was wearing flip-flops. And I had like a bad burn and like a cut and glass all in me and stuff. But other than that, I was like, no, I think I'm fine. He said, did you feel anything like in your neck or your back? And I said, well, I did feel like a little pop click when I got out and started walking. And he said, lay down. And then they strapped me to the deal and like secured me and everything and put me in the ambulance when I got there. And we did x-rays and everything, came back clear. So I went home, and the next day I couldn't move. Like literally I was so sore I couldn't move. And so they sent me back to do, sorry, just text message coming through. They sent me back to a CAT scan, and they found out that I had actually fractured my neck. So that was a long recovery because I was really close to having to go into surgery. I'm so lucky, like seriously so blessed and lucky that it was not worse than it was, especially since I got sent home. And it can shift, you know, and cause even more problems. But yeah, I had to be like braced up for like 5 months after that, and my wedding and everything.
Your wedding,
which I can laugh about it now.
Were you in a brace in your wedding?
Yeah. Everything except for pictures and walking down the aisle. The surgeon told me, he said, if you were my daughter and I was walking you down the aisle, he said, I had you and I was the only one touching you, I would say, okay, do that. And for pictures and things like that. But he said, other than that, you have to wear that. You have to put that brace back on. And so, yeah, I was in the neck brace in my wedding dress.
Hey, you'll never forget it. But could you have been paralyzed otherwise?
Yeah, he said that, you know, if someone bumped me or I fell or they hugged me too hard or something like that fracture could shift even like a, you know, a tiny, tiny amount and it caused that, or, you know, just have to have surgery. So, I was lucky.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow, thank God for the limits.
Every time I have like one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So what are you thinking? Like when you are in the truck and it's flipping over and over and over again, and then you get out and you're going through this process, like what is that like to be in a truly like near death experience? Like, I mean, I know you didn't maybe like go off and like see the white lights, but like you were like just a hair away from death. Like, what is that like to experience that?
Yeah, I think I actually, I didn't even know what PTSD was at the time, but I think I actually had PTSD from that because, and to this day, when we're riding in the car, I still like squirm when we pass a guardrail and it's kind of close, you know? And for the longest time, like I would freak out, when I was a passenger and we would pass a guardrail. So I think that, you know, obviously that's not like a normal thing for someone to do. So I think there was some PTSD, and I don't think I like realized how cool, like how bad it could have been. Cause everything, we were like getting married and, so busy at that time that I just didn't like process it. But yeah, I definitely had some things I had to deal with and work through with that. And especially like with Jordan and driving and stuff, we would get into so many fights about his driving and stuff. So that was something we had to work through too. But yeah, I mean, I just feel we both feel really lucky.
How did your family handle
it? Weren't hurt worse. I think it was pretty traumatic for my dad drove up on us because he was out checking cows close to where we were. And Jordan called my mom and dad and just let them know that we were okay. But what had happened, because such a small like town, that he was afraid that they would hear it, you know, because people have scanners and stuff like that. And he was afraid that they would hear that we were in a wreck, you know, and freak out. But he just wanted them to know that we were okay. But my dad actually, he was close. So he drove out there and saw me, you know, get into the ambulance and everything. And I'm sure that was traumatic for him, you know, after what happened with my sister and everything. But yeah, it was a hard day.
Honey. And then after all this, or is this when you start with your autoimmune also, or were you in the middle of that? Because I mean, when did that start playing?
Yeah. You know, gosh, this is such a long story, and I'll try to not make it so long because I don't want to sound like I'm playing my violin. But so almost immediately after that, I don't know if it was had something to do with it or if it was just coincidence, but I started, like right after I healed from that, the neck break and everything, I started having like all kinds of weird symptoms. And I was tired all the time, and that just tons of different things that I knew something wasn't right. And I had a lot of testing done. They diagnosed me with Lyme disease, severe Epstein-Barr. And so I started like treating those, and I got way worse, when we were treating them. And so about that time, Jordan got hurt really bad. And
he get hurt?
He ended up getting traded. He had had lots of injuries in college, but he got a knee injury, like a really bad knee injury when he was playing at Cincinnati. And he was doing so great. Like his rookie year was phenomenal. And this was his second year, and he was doing great again, and then he got injured, and they let him go, which they do. I mean, it's the NFL. They're just, you know, it's very cutthroat. So they let him go, and he got picked up by Jacksonville, and he just wasn't the same after that, you know. And then I was getting worse. The pub company, the small pub company I was under, ended up closing its doors. And so I didn't get a renewed contract. It was just lots of really hard things going on. And we were newly married, which comes with its, as you know, its challenges. Yep. And we just made the choice to move back to Texas for at least, you know, a little bit. And then I just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And so I thought there's something more going on. I just need to look more into this. So I had blood work done. I had my autoimmune workup done because one of the doctors suggested that I do that. Came back like with early markers of RA, with rheumatoid arthritis, and then like a few secondary autoimmune diseases off of that. Told I was most likely celiac, which runs in my family. Yeah, I quit all like treatments I was doing because I was only getting worse. And I just spent like a year just totally revamping my lifestyle. And I did autoimmune paleo and just everything that I could think of, like did all natural like cleaning products and just trying to feel better, you know? And, so gradually I started feeling a little better, not completely, but enough to where I didn't feel like I had to be in bed all day, which is awesome. And that's about the time we started doing the hunting show, like you
mentioned earlier. So is that what it was? You ended up figuring out it was like RA and celiac and all that, and like switching to the all natural is what cured it? Because this is crazy. Yeah. You just survived a major car accident. And then you lose your publishing deal ends, you lose your publishing deal. Jordan is now has an injury, which totally affects his football career. And now you're having to like be in bed in your beginning of marriage. Were you depressed? This sounds like it would be so heavy to swallow all this.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm not typically a person that has a lot of depression or anxiety, but during that time, I developed it for sure. And I don't want to ever say like I had depression because I know people who suffer with depression. Mm-hmm. And I would never like say, yeah, that's a whole nother animal. And I don't think I ever had depression, but I did have some depression for sure because of all that. And because you just don't know, like, am I just going to have to live the rest of my life this way, or just accept that I feel this way, you know, when you're getting all these diagnoses or however you say it, just kind of feels like, oh, there's just not an end in sight here. But I did, you know, go in the natural route for me. I know it doesn't work for everyone. Really helped, not completely. I ended up getting diagnosed with later, a couple of years later, with endometriosis, which I had to have surgery for that too. And then through like, this is such a long story, but we had just started. So we had just, right before I got diagnosed with endometriosis, we had decided to, we were doing the hunting show and we had decided we wanted to try to start a family. And I really, and I'd never had any kind of female problems before at all. And I think it was God's way of saying, no, your body's not ready to have babies yet. And it wasn't. And so I had endometriosis surgery, and my surgeon basically said, when she came out and told me, cause they have to, you know, go in to see like how bad it is. They can see it like on the, they do ultrasounds and they can see like cysts and things like that. But to actually tell you how bad it is or whatever, they have to like go in there and see it. And she just said, you want to have kids? And I said, yeah, I do. And, she said, well, if you're not pregnant in 6 months, she said, you'll have to do, she said, those were her words, you'll have to do, what do you call it? Fertility treatments. And I was devastated because I knew I still, like, health-wise and, like, physically and emotionally, I was not ready to carry a baby yet. And so Jordan and I talked through that, and, he was just like, I don't believe that. If you don't want to do fertility, and let me say, I know a lot of people who've done it and it's given them their babies. But for me, after everything I'd been through, I just knew it wasn't something I ever wanted to do. Even if that meant I wasn't going to be able to have kids, and Jordan agreed. And so he just said, keep praying. And I'll do the same. And he said, if we don't ever have, I'm crying because I'm pregnant and emotional.
Me too.
If we don't, I'm sorry. If I didn't realize this was going to get so serious and emotional. If we don't ever have them, he said, I'm fine. He said, I'm perfectly fine. Oh, you know, he said, I'll love you forever and we'll have a great life and we'll have fun. And he said, don't worry about it. And I said, okay. So we just kept on living. And
pressure taken off of you to know that, like, you know, you're going to completely give it up to God. You knew in your heart that you weren't physically, emotionally, or mentally ready to do that. I mean, truly, what you've gone through to have to then go into fertility treatments, that's so hard on your body. And I agree with you. I've had so many friends who've done that, and it has given them beautiful children, mm-hmm. and it's an amazing option. Mm-hmm. But when you know in your heart that you can't handle it, and just to trust that you're going to let it be, that's a big move.
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, I was really worried because Jordan loves kids. He loves them more than me. And he's like, they're just drawn to him. You know, like every kid he's around, they're just drawn to him. And so I wanted him to be a dad more than I wanted to be a mom. Like, it was just one of those things. But he was great through it all. And then we about that time we started doing the hunting show, which was a terrible reason for so many different reasons. I mean, a terrible thing for us to do.
Why?
Oh gosh. Well, first of all, we loved to hunt, but mostly because you would go and you would get your one deer and you'd stock your freezer, you know, for the year, or your one elk or whatever. When we started, neither one of us have hunted, like, hardly. I think Jordan's gone once, like, with friends, once or twice in the last, like, 3 years since we quit. I haven't been at all. The last three deer that I got, I cried because I couldn't justify it anymore because we had plenty of meat, and it just took the joy away from the whole process. And so that was one reason. And then we were gone all the time. We were just both dog tired. Jordan was gone more than me because I only did like half of the stuff and he did all of it. And so it was a huge stressor, gone all the time.
Where did the show air?
It was on the Outdoor Channel. So it's called the Bucks of Tecumseh. And I think I haven't even watched Outdoor Channel in so long. That's terrible. But I think it's still on, but they have different hosts now, obviously.
Jordan were the host of that show.
Yes. Uh-huh. And so I was still feeling pretty bad. I was able to tough it out and do things. And but like when you're doing the hunting and stuff, you're having to wake up super early and travel. And I was still doing like paleo. And so I was having to like stock coolers and cook all the time and try to manage my health through all that. And so I was still, doing some music stuff, but that kind of got put on the back burner through all that. And it shouldn't have, but it did. And then, but I will say, I think the reason we did that we did meet some really amazing people through the whole thing, but we had to move from Austin to Bernie, Texas, which is outside of San Antonio. And through that, I met a girl who led me to this holistic clinic that's in San Antonio that ended up completely saving my life. Like I ended up feeling better and then worse again. And then I met her and I started going to this clinic, and long story short, I spent 2 years there and they literally saved my life.
What is the clinic? What happened there?
So they do, I always should I tell people this, or they just do a lot of like holistic things. And like I said before, I know it doesn't work for everyone. And I also have friends who have autoimmune, diseases and disorders and things like that, who have gone the regular medical route. And it's worked for them, they manage it well and they're happy and, live pretty normal lives. It didn't work for me. And so they do a lot of detox therapy. And they basically just build your body back up as they're detoxing. And it just kind of gets rid of the bad and puts back in the good. And I mean, I've seen people walk in there who were in wheelchairs, with RA, and then I was started at the same time as this lady, for example, and she was in a wheelchair. I saw her go from a wheelchair to a walker to a cane, and then now she's walking on her own. So I'm a true believer in natural and holistic healing because of that, because not only did it work for me, but I saw it work for other people who were way worse off than me. But yeah, and so I did that for 2 years, and I talked to the main lady there, and she also asked me if I wanted to have kids, and I said, yeah, I do. And she said, well, you don't need to do that for 2 years. She said, your body's not ready for it. It won't be good for you or the baby. And I said, okay, well, we weren't trying right now anyway. She said, but you'll get there. She said, I promise you'll get there. And I said, okay, whatever. We'll see. And so I had been at the clinic for 2 years, and it's a really it's a hard process because you're detoxing. And I don't know if you've ever done any kind of detoxing or anything, but It sucks.
Yeah.
And so yeah, that was another 2 years of, and she told me, she said, you're going to feel worse before you feel better. Are you okay with that? And I said, yeah, as long as I can see like the light, you know, at the end of the tunnel. And I did. I just started seeing, it's hard to explain, but little lights turning on again. And I would be like sitting outside and I would feel like, oh my gosh, I like felt like a joy from, you know, that or whatever. It was not just physical, but it all goes hand in hand to me. I know that sounds like woo, but for sure the lights started slowly turning back on. And after like 2 years of that, I was like, I had an album ready sitting on the shelf that I had done here in Austin. And I was like, I can put this album out. And so I kind of rushed and got the album ready to go and I put it out. And a month after I put it out, I got pregnant. We were even like thinking about it. So we had Sway March 31st of this last year. And then 3 months after we had Sway, we unexpectedly got pregnant again. So yeah, the clinic that I went to for sure saved my life. So I'm very thankful.
So it really treated not just your autoimmune, but also your endometriosis. Like, you just healed yourself from the inside out. I believe in that so much. I believe in modern medicine as well, but I think that the holistic route is so amazing. And it is, I mean, I've heard stories like yours from so many people who have cured things that were untreatable, that were deemed untreatable, or, you know, all these other issues that were coming along. And I think it's incredible, Sunny. And it's also incredible that you stuck with it, that you committed to it, because that is a grueling process.
I was just tired of feeling bad, you know, and I thought, well, if I can stick it out for a couple of years and then live the rest of my life way better and have the chance to feel somewhat normal again and kind of do what I love to do, and then it would be worth it. So, and it has been, and not to say these last few years have not been hard with, I mean, as you know, having a baby and all those things, but it makes you more thankful for, like, on those hard days, you're like, okay, well, it, you know, I could not be able to do this right now too. So
you have, like, do you feel like almost 100% in your body again?
Yeah, I mean, even the healthiest person, of course, is going to have, like, off days. And I feel because of all the health stuff I've been through and everything I know, I'm really aware, like, of everything that's going on in my body. So I think I notice things a lot more, like, why do I have a headache today? Oh, it's probably because of this or whatever. But I think I feel better than I did when I was in college, to be honest, high school and college. So, and I've also been pregnant for the last 2 years. So let me get back to you on how I'm feeling after having 2 C-sections and 2 babies in 1 year. And, but yeah, I'll let you know.
Sunny, you just had one thing after the other, after the other, after the other. And I know, like, it's led you to be the empathetic, insightful, inspired, loving person that you are. But sometimes, like, when you hear a story, and I don't even know if you feel this way because you've been living it, but it's like, sometimes it's just so, it feels overwhelming to have to just go through all this stuff.
Yeah. And I think of course, when you're going through something like that, you're angry. But I can honestly say now that I'm thankful for all of it, because I, like, little things don't bother me as much anymore. And I'm thankful, like, even though I didn't get to go back to Nashville and pursue, you know, things that I had always dreamed and planned to pursue, I understand that whatever is supposed, and we've talked about this before, I remember it here, sisters, over a glass of wine. Whatever's supposed to be yours will end up being yours. You know, you don't have to force it. And we have a maker that knows us and knows us fully more than we know ourselves. And he knows what we need and what we don't need. And so I just find peace and joy in that. And, you know, I got to put out my album. I'm still writing. About to put out another album when this second little boy, after the second little boy comes, because it's sitting on the shelf ready to go. And yeah, I just feel, instead of like feeling like, well, I didn't get to do this or that, I know it wasn't, that's not what was meant to be. So I just find peace in that for sure.
And you're still doing it. And that's the thing that I agree with you also, is I'm not a country music star either. And that's, I mean, like on the biggest level, but that's why I moved to Nashville. But then I ended up realizing that I actually don't even really want to be a singer or songwriter. That's not really my passion. It led me to hosting, and it led me to this podcast, and it led me to a whole new world. But because I started that dream, I'm going to hide from my daughter. She just walked by with Michael. I don't want her to see me. I'm so grateful that I had the initial dream that took me on this run that led me down all these different roads, because now you have your life in Austin, you've had all these experiences, you've overcome so much. Now you have one beautiful boy, another one on the way, you're making music, you have a life that maybe like wasn't what you had thought it would be, but it's full and it's rich and it's like you said, it's yours. And it's all these different pieces have made you into the person you are today. And you know, it's like, I think all the time, like we have all these grand plans of how we want our life to go. But like, how do I know where it's supposed to go? You know, like how am I? So I'm not, like you were talking about earlier, I'm not the maker. Like I'm going to follow my gut. I'm going to follow the open doors. I'm going to follow the circumstances that come into my life. But like, why would I think that I could just plan it out in my head and that's how it's supposed to go? You know, I might be missing opportunities in a life that's way better, but I would have never picked it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Totally. I 100% agree with that. And it took me a little bit to get there. Especially when you're in the thick of like struggle or whatever. And I'm sure you did the same thing. But then when you get to experience, you know, other joys that you're like, oh, okay, I might not have gotten to do that, you know, had I, you know, stayed or, you know, had more success or whatever. I don't know, just like I said, just makes you more thankful, and you are like born to do what you're doing right now. It's amazing.
I would have never figured this out though, if I had pursued, music hadn't led me all the different roads to this. I mean, I didn't even know this podcasting, like I didn't even know this was a thing, you know, it's like, I didn't even know that I didn't know. It's just because all of the random doors that opened and closed for me led me to this. And it's like, I could have never planned it, could have never premeditated it. What has being a mother taught you about life and yourself?
Oh, I feel like even after being a mother, I'm a totally different person. But I mean, you know, you just, all those little things you didn't understand before, like other, you know, other mothers. I even made fun of people for things. I will never do that. I will never be that person. And I'm totally that person now, you know? Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. It's just, obviously it's just a love like no other. And it's so cool to see, half of you and half of your husband make this like little monster and get to see your spouse feel that way about their child. And I don't know, my patience have definitely grown. I've learned I've learned like how busy you are. I didn't know, because Suede, my first, he's been a high needs child since day one. He's trying to like stand up and walk right now. So it's just even, you know, it's just even more, but you don't realize how like busy you can be but at the same time be bored. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like it's like you're nonstop, but you're also bored at the same time. That sounds terrible because I felt guilty about that several times, but the more mothers I talk to about it, they're like, oh no, totally get what you're saying.
Totally get that.
But yeah, I didn't realize how selfish I was. I thought it was, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Like Jordan and I talked about
that. Busy but bored, because like I feel that same way. It's like you all day long, you chase this baby, you wipe butts, you feed them, you bathe them, you, you know, just everything is about the baby. And it's like, you don't really get anything done. And your brain, like you're stimulated in your brain because you're thinking about this baby and you love this baby. But then it's also like, yes, like a boredom too. I totally know exactly what you're saying. And it's bad for saying that because you're the happiest you've ever been. But it's also this weird, I was talking to my mom about that last night. I was like, I get now when the baby is born, the mother is born too. Like my old self is dead. Like I don't even know, I couldn't even be my old self anymore now that Sunny's here. Like I don't even, just the things I used to focus on and care about, and I still care about on some level, but not really at all. It's like incomparable. The new person I am now, it's like I am a completely new human being.
Totally. Yeah. And I think it just refines yourself. Like I said, I didn't realize how selfish I was. It refines that. I mean, we're always going to be selfish because we're human, but you just kind of go out the window, especially for the first 3 months, especially when you have a high needs baby in a quarantine where you can't see anyone and you're like, what the Augie Sticks is going on. And then your hormones and, you know, all the above. And I was talking to someone about this the other day. They're like, did you have postpartum depression? And I was like, yeah. Doesn't everyone? There's no possible way after all of that, no matter how well it goes or how good of a baby you have, there's no possible way that each woman doesn't feel that to some degree.
Yeah.
And that's something I didn't understand either until I'd been through it. I was like, gosh, man, now I understand why that friend I didn't see her for like 6 months, or we didn't talk for like almost a year, you know, you get it. And
totally. It's not like you're, it's a weird kind of, postpartum depression is an interesting thing because you're so
happy
and you're so in love with your child and you're so thankful for this life. But it's like all of these hormones are leaving your body. You are now a completely new person. The amount of energy, time, emotional, fear, everything that is put on this child to keep it alive, and like meeting this person that you're fully responsible for, the death of your old self, it changes your marriage, it changes your body, it changes everything about how your life was. It's like, it's a death of your old self plus a million hormones. Like, how could you not feel that depression? And but at the same time, extreme happiness. It's so bizarre.
It really is. It's a very strange process. I'll agree. It's so weird. And I was not prepared for that at all. No idea. And I've like talked to several of my friends who became mothers before me, and I was like, why didn't you tell me this? And they're all like, I don't know. I guess we've kind of just forgotten about that because, you know, they've got older, like 2 and 3 year olds or whatever. And I guess we forgot. I was like, how do you forget that? And one of them said, well, I didn't want to scare you. And I was like, oh, it wouldn't have scared me. It would just like have prepared me a little more for it, you know. But yeah, it's a very interesting, awesome little process you have to go through for sure.
I wonder how it's going to be for you with two. Like, I wonder if it'll be easier because you've already gone once, or if it's going to be harder because you have now two children under the age of two. And wow, that's going to be a lot. One is like, you know, a newborn. But I wonder, like, if the postpartum will be easier, or if it'll be harder, or what. Like, you're going to have to keep me posted on how that goes. Because at least you were prepared for it now, you know?
Yeah. Ugh.
But two is going to be a totally different ball game.
Yeah, I think part of me, I know. And part of me is like, well, I wish I didn't know, because I wouldn't be, it's not that I'm dreading having him, but I'm also like, oh gosh, I know what it's going to be like, especially the first couple of months.
Those first three months took me to my knees.
Oh my, yes. And we, you know, we had swayed like right when the shutdown, the quarantine and all that had started, and the virus was super scary. Like, that's when it was all super scary. So we weren't like letting people see him because we didn't know, you know, you have this new precious little baby in this pandemic happening and you have no idea if it's safe for him to see people. But thankfully my parents, they knew he was coming. It was a scheduled C-section because he was breached. So they kind of quarantined for a couple of weeks and they were able to come and stay with us for a couple of weeks and help. And that was my saving grace for sure. But this time around, I think that I know more and I am not going to feel guilty about getting help this time. And I'll know how to prepare a little more for after the baby comes. Like, with your first, or for me, I was more about like the pregnancy and researching about pregnancy and all those things. And, you're like doing your showers and, you know, living in the moment with all that stuff instead of like preparing for after the baby comes. And so this time I've been preparing for after.
Yeah.
So
I totally get that. Okay, so I'm going to wrap up, but I have a couple more questions. One is, you and Jordan have such an amazing marriage, and y'all are such just a strong couple. You've been through so much together, from obviously like hometown sweethearts, then reconnecting, him being a professional football player, having an injury, having to change his whole life, you with country music and your autoimmune, the car wreck, like the fear of not having children. So many things y'all have been through together, and you keep coming out stronger and stronger. And now, parents, what is the secret to a marriage, especially a marriage that has weathered so many storms and survived and thrived?
Oh, first of all, we don't have a perfect marriage. Oh my goodness. And I would never want anyone to ever think that. I think we've grown and developed into being able to communicate a lot better. Like, now I will say that we have learned how to communicate effectively after 10 years. I mean, gosh, we should have done that sooner, but do not be afraid to go to marital counseling, because you are two imperfect people and you're going to butt heads on so many issues because you're human. It's so important to have somebody who is unbiased intervene and, you know, direct you in the ways you need to go so that you can have a healthy relationship. That doesn't mean that it's going to always be perfect at all, because we still fight about really stupid stuff. And well, last night we were fighting over something dumb, but
Michael and I, like, will say, our fights are so dumb. I'm like, these are the dumbest fights ever.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, but I'm also thankful that it's also fighting over dumb stuff and not like super serious stuff either. But yeah, I will say, do not be afraid to go to counseling or feel like that is like a bad thing at all. I mean, even individually, it can help your marriage. So, and
I'm saying, like, you exercise your body, you take care of what you eat, you work hard at, like, your job and career. Why would you not work hard on your brain and your emotional being with your spouse and yourself? Like, that's, we live in our own little world. Why would you not try to maintain that and keep that healthy? Like, that's the most important out of anything that we maintain.
Oh, 100%. And also just making your, I mean, and I think that just depends on, like, your lifestyle and your beliefs and things like that. But for us, our marriage comes first. And we've talked about, we had time, you know, years to talk about things like that before our baby came. And we both agreed that, you know, the babies are going to be our world, but our marriage and our relationship is always going to come first. So, and we want our kids to see that and know that.
Well, that's the foundation.
Anyway, I'm sure we're.
But that's the foundation for the
exact
world. If you and Jordan aren't strong, then how could you provide a strong foundation for your children? You know.
For sure, for sure. But I mean, it's, you know, it's hard. Marriage is just hard. It's always going to be.
My mom told me that my whole life. She's always said marriage is like a job. You have to work at it like you work at anything else. And I always thought that was weird when I was growing up as a kid. Like, why do you have to work at marriage? Like, it doesn't feel like that's something that you need to work at. But now that I've been married for 6 years and with Michael for almost 10 or 11, it's like, you absolutely have to work at it. You absolutely have to learn how to communicate. You absolutely have to learn how to apologize and learn how to, you know, drop your armor and learn. You just have to learn the other person, and you have to always be trying. If you're not trying, then it's, you have to maintain it constantly.
Oh, for sure. And that was something, you know, I didn't know either. I mean, you know it, but you don't know it, like, going into marriage. And, 'cause, you know, you're not always going to have those, like, I mean, you will have sparks and things like that, but when you, those carry you through the first couple of years, and then yeah, you're like, oh, this person leaves their dirty socks everywhere, and, you know.
I know, it's like, in the very beginning, it's like The Notebook. You're doing all this passion and romance, and it's like, you can't get enough of each other, and then you've been married for a long time, you still love each other and all the things, but it's like, I'm not trying to just, like, go get slammed up against a wall right now, you know what I'm saying?
Let me sleep. Especially now. Don't knock me up again, Lord.
Please. Please. You need a break, woman.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
man. Sonny, you're amazing. You are such a bright light to this world. I'm so thankful to know you. And when I lived in Austin for a year, it was so fun to get to hang out with you. And because you're in my sister's neighborhood, I'm so thankful that we get to, like, keep up. And you're just an amazing person. And thank you for sharing your story and your heart and just who you are, because it's just truly inspiring. I always leave my podcast with one question, which is, leave your light. And basically, it's just, what do you want people to know? It's just a very open-ended question.
Oh, gosh. First of all, thank you for having me. I'm truly, like, blown away that you would even ask me. But I think one thing I wish I could have, and I still have to tell myself this a lot, still something I work on every day, but I think just don't prepare yourself for the worst thing that can happen, because no matter what happens, it's always going to be different than what you think.
That's so.
And my cousin, it's actually Jordan's cousin, Kara, has a podcast too, and she asked me this question. And when I told her that, she said, yeah, that's something I deal with too. And she said, I read this article, or it was in a book or something. And she said, the worst thing that can happen. You're literally putting your body and your mind through that, but God's not there when you're putting yourself through it. But no matter what happens, he's going to be there. So it's just better to not think of the worst, to prepare yourself for the worst, I guess I should say.
Wow.
Anyway.
Because when you think of the worst thing that you think can happen, that is really probably not the worst thing that's going to happen to you. It's going to be something completely different. And when you're living in that fear in your mind, God's not there. That makes so much sense.
Yeah.
So you might as well just try to live in the moment and trust God and trust that whatever comes your way, God will help you through. That's really all we can do.
Totally. It's a work, always a work in progress.
Honey, you are so awesome. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your amazing story. I just love you, girl. And thanks for being the inspiration, one of the inspirations for Sally's thing.
Well, thanks for having this whole podcast. I've really enjoyed listening to all your episodes. So yeah, thanks for having me. Love ya.
Love you, girl. And I'll see you around the hood when we're back in cabin.
Now. Sounds good. Have fun at the ranch. Bye.
Bye, Sunny.
4 Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting 2 young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy. Yeah. Right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.